out will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, though.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our Patreon supporters. If you'd like to become a Patreon supporter, please go to our website at bodybuildinglegendsshow.com. And in the upper right-hand corner, you will see the link to become a Patreon donor yourself. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding, and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. On today's show, we have an interview with one of the most passionate bodybuilders I think I've ever met, John DeFendis. John was a great teenage bodybuilder back in the 70s, and then he finally got his pro card at the 1988 MPC USA Championships. And at the time, it was one of the biggest upsets in bodybuilding because John had not competed for 5 years. His last contest before that was in 1983. He was pretty much off the radar. Nobody was looking at him as a top contender for the national level shows. And the national level shows in the MPC in the 80s was very, very tough. They had the MPC USA, the Nationals, and the North America. And everybody pretty much knew in the magazines who the top guys were for that year's competition. And John pretty much came out of nowhere. Nobody expected him to compete. And he, like I said, he had not competed in 5 years. And he won the overall with a perfect score, beating all the top favorites for the title. So it was really, really a huge upset. So that is going to be the focus of our interview today with John DeFendis. This is going to be part one of our interview because we talked for quite a while. And in this part of the interview, John's going to talk about competing as a teenager and, of course, training under Steve Mihalik, who was his coach. And if you've heard John's interviews before, Steve Mihalik was a 1972 Mr. America winner. And he went on to own a gym called Mr. America's Gym in New York. And John was training there as a teenager. And Steve Mihalik was coaching John. And Steve had a very, very crazy way of training. They called it intensity or insanity because they used very high volume, usually 60 to 80 sets of body part. And they also trained very hard every single set. They went to failure. They would do drop sets, super sets, tri sets, giant sets, absolutely crazy training. But John really responded to that type of training. He became a winner as a teenager and then eventually, like I said, went on to win the Mr. USA title in 1988. So that's going to be part one of our interview coming up in a minute with John DeFendis. You guys are going to really, really like this. All right. What else is going on? We got a bunch of birthdays this week. On June 21st, Rachel McLish celebrated her, dare I say it, 67th birthday? Wow, Rachel still looks fantastic. One of the greatest female bodybuilders, in my opinion, the very first Miss Olympia winner. She was a two-time Miss Olympia winner. And I still see her on Facebook, and she still looks as beautiful as ever. One of the most beautiful women to ever compete in bodybuilding, in my humble opinion. And I'm sure a lot of guys who grew up during the 80s would agree with me because we all admired Rachel from afar when we saw her pictures, in the magazines. Today is Tom Platz's birthday. Today, when I'm recording this, is June 26th. Tom is also 67 years old, born in 1955. So happy birthday to Tom. And sadly, it would have been Matt Mendenhall's 62nd birthday if he was still with us. Matt died last August at the age of 61. So that's was a terrible death, and we were all sorry to see Matt go. One of the greatest amateur bodybuilders ever. One of the greatest bodybuilders ever, probably. I mean, he had the greatest genetics of anybody, and he just never made it to the pro ranks. But we still remember Matt Mendenhall for sure. And then coming up tomorrow on the 27th, Lance Dreher's birthday, and Lance will also be 67 years old. So it's funny. I just bought some old magazines from a guy named Jeff Linton on Facebook. So if you're on Facebook, check out Jeff Linton. He has a Facebook page where he is selling a bunch of old magazines. So I just bought a bunch of Iron Man magazines from him these go all the way back to the 60s. And I got a lot of good ones from the 70s, but really, really some great, great magazines. And then I bought another stack of magazines from Jeff, and he sent me some really old muscle builders which they were called Muscle Power back then. The first one I got was from 1947. I didn't even know Joe Weider was publishing magazines way back in 1947. And I got a couple from the 50s. And yeah, just some amazing, amazing old magazines. So I've been having a lot of fun reading these old magazines, especially those Iron Man that I never got before. It was such a fun time in bodybuilding back then with all the different organizations, the different federations, all the variety of bodybuilders, just some great, great stuff. And I got to mention, if you are a Patreon supporter of this podcast, I have been sending out audio links every week where I'm reading a different article. Of course, I do it on this show every week when we do our podcast, but I am also sending out extra ones to our Patreon supporters. So I will also be sending out articles that I'm writing, and we're also going to have some extra interview footage that I do with our podcast that will not be shown on the show. This will be some little bit of extra stuff for our Patreon supporters. So again, if you guys are interested in that, you can just go to bodybuildinglegendshow.com and click on the link to become a Patreon supporter. All right. But yeah, I got some really, really great magazines. You guys are going to really, I got some great material to share with you guys over the next months. I mean, lots and lots of stuff, some really great stuff. All right. We did get one email. Let me pull this up. If you guys are interested in emailing me, you can do that at naturalolympia@gmail.com. This is from our friend Rich Fitter, who is a big fan of the show. He says, "Hey, John, I really enjoy listening to your show every week. It's a trip down memory lane that reminds me why I fell in love with the sport more than 40 years ago. One question that I've always wanted an answer to is how some of the IFBB pros earned their pro cards without winning the Mr. Universe back in the late 70s, early 80s. Some of the names that come to mind are Wayne Robbins, Frank Wainwright, Ron Tufel, and Don Mazaluski. Even Ray Mensah turned pro after winning the Mr. America but losing the Universe. Under today's rules, this would be allowed, but back then, IFBB pro status was more exclusive and harder to obtain. Thank you for a terrific program. I look forward to it every week. Best always, Rich Fitter." Wow, Rich, that's a great question. And I did think about that sometimes, but you really bring up some good ones, because back then you had to win the Universe in order to turn pro. And Ron Tufel was second to Samir Banute in 1979. So he really should not have been eligible to compete as a professional. I think he went back to the America in 1980 when Gary Leonard won. And I think Ron actually won his class, or maybe came second. I'm not sure. But anyways, he was competing as a pro by 1981. The only thing I can think of is that Wayne D'Amelio was running his Grand Prix shows by the early 80s. And I'm guessing that Wayne probably allowed that. I think he was in charge of the pro division for the IFBB. So I think he was inviting these guys to turn pro. And a lot of those guys competed in the Night of the Champions or some of the other Grand Prix shows. Like, I remember Frank Wainwright was one guy who was competing in 79 in that show that Mensah won. And I think he was in another show too that year. So that's the only thing I can think of. They must have been invited by Wayne D'Amelio. Maybe he just needed some more bodybuilders to fill out the lineup. And that includes Ray Mensah too, because Ray was another guy who took second at the Universe. He took second to Joseph Wilkosch in the heavyweight class in 1979, the same year that Ron Tufel took second. So there's two guys that were from that contest that didn't win their class. So yeah, I'm thinking that's the only explanation, because then later on when the MPC started in 1982, the rules got much more strict where you had to win the Universe, because anybody who didn't win the Universe back then, like Moses Maldonado was one, or Tim Belknap, who actually won the America in 1981, but took second at the Universe in 81, had to come back to the MPC Nationals in 82 to try to get his pro card. He never did. And then he just went over to NABA, but they let him into the pros also. So yeah, it really gets confusing. There's a lot of bodybuilders who weren't really eligible for pro status. So that's a great question though. Really good question, Rich. Thanks for sending that. All right, what else we got? Oh, I do want to mention, of course, our Maturity Muscle podcast that's on every week now. Me, Nick Trigilli, and Samir Banute are doing a weekly podcast. We do it on Mondays. It'll be up on Tuesdays on YouTube. So if you're interested in checking that out, we just talk about a variety of different topics. We've done two of them so far. This will be our third one this week. So just go to YouTube and look under Old School Labs channel. You can subscribe to that, and you'll be able to check out that podcast every week. It's pretty interesting. We talk about what's going on in bodybuilding that week, and, of course, we always throw in a lot of old stories. Me and Samir are kind of educating Nick on the history of bodybuilding because he's much younger than me and Samir, so he hasn't heard a lot of these old stories. So it's pretty interesting. So check that out. All right, guys, that's all I got. So here is part one of our interview with the very passionate John Defendis, where we're going to talk about him coming out of nowhere and winning the 1988 MPC USA. Here we go. All right, welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I have a very special guest with us this week, Mr. John Defendis, who was the 1988 USA champion and had a great bodybuilding career. Welcome to the show, John.
Thank you, John. I really appreciate you having me on. Your podcast is phenomenal.
Thank you.
Everybody, Tom Tewilde, everybody bragging about.
Yeah.
They love being on it. And we really appreciate you doing it because it's, you know, it brings back a lot of great memories. And let's a lot of the new people see what an insight into the old days, you know.
Yeah, that's why I'm doing it. I want to share the old days of bodybuilding with some of these younger guys, you know.
Sure.
I had this old magazine here from Flex, and this was when you won the USA. That's a great cover, by the way, too.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And I was reading the article, and it was really interesting because they said it was one of the greatest comebacks in bodybuilding history because the last time you competed before that was 5 years before. So you came back after a five-year layoff, and you won one of the biggest national-level contests. And, well, as we all know, the shows in the 80s were crazy. There were so many great bodybuilders. And you had to win the overall at the USA back then to turn pro. You couldn't just win your class.
Right, right.
So it was very, very tough to get a pro card, and you beat everybody that was coming up there. So I wanted to talk to you about that. But before we talk about that, I wanted to go back a little bit and to your career. You said I had Tom on the show before, Tom Twilliger, and he's competed with you before. He's mentioned you, you know, he's gave you shout outs a few times when I'm interviewing him. So in 77, I'm looking at this musclememory.com. They said you took ninth at the Teenage America.
Yeah, that's true. That's true about that. But the muscle memory is all wrong. They don't even have half of my titles in there.
No, they don't. They don't. They did the same thing with me too.
Back in 77, I listened to some guy, and he told me the night before I was looking pretty good. And the night before he told me, you know, eat 2 pounds of chocolate because it's going to bring out your vascularity, you know. And it was somebody that I, you know, it was a bodybuilder that I kind of trusted. It wasn't Bob Gruskin. That's where I met Bob Gruskin.
Okay.
I ate 2 pounds of chocolate and I lost about 12 or 14 pounds overnight. And I think out of the four, if it was 14 pounds, I think 13.9 of it was muscle and, you know, a tenth of a pound of fat.
Right.
Oh yeah, and that was a disaster. Then I became much better than that. When I won the Teenage New York and the Mr. New York, I beat Mike Torsher, who had won the Teenage America
right.
the year before, and I was still a teenager. And that was a great accomplishment because Mike's was a great bodybuilder as a teenager.
Really. Yeah, yeah, he won the Teenage America in 76, right?
Yeah, I think 76 or 77. 76.
Okay.
Yeah.
76. And then you beat him in a teenage show after that.
Teenage show, and he was at that time he was 20. I was still a teenager. Yeah.
Wow. What show was that, John?
That was a Teenage Metropolitan New York and the Mr. New York.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a big stepping stone contest. Tom Tewilliger was a winner at that.
Yeah, you mentioned that too a few times.
Tony Gandolfo, you know, yeah. Tom beat me the year before.
Okay.
Yeah, Tommy beat me the year before, and then the day after, I had a celebration at my house for him. I got that picture with the trophies, and we own deli, so I had deli sandwiches there for Tommy, and
and
he brought his trophies. The guy brought his trophy, so we're sitting there with the trophy. I'm sitting there with the second place trophy. He's got this big trophy, first place.
He brought his trophy to the party.
Yeah, now when I'm looking back at the picture, I'm going, this guy brought his trophy over my house. Like, hey, yeah, look, I won. You know, it's like, so yeah. I might as well bring my trophies into the picture. I brought my second place, I'm a loser trophy. And I
Thanks for having a party for me. I'm going to bring my trophy.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's hilarious. Yeah, I was just looking back at this, now that you told me about the chocolate, I didn't know about that. But I was thinking, wow, he went from ninth place at the Teenage Mr. America in 1977 to getting third at the Mr. USA, the Mr. USA, not the Teenage Mr. USA, in 1979. So what an amazing comeback. But I didn't know that, you know, you had to eat the chocolate and you were way off.
Yeah, well, that was one thing. The other thing, too, was training with Mihalik. I learned about intensity, and, you know, I thought I trained hard. Everybody thinks they train hard, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So they have a wake-up call, and, you know, I always tell people, you know, you train hard. Oh, man, I train hard, you know. And they get into 10 minutes into the workout with me, and they're like, well, I had no idea. It was like, dude, I go, what are you doing? I'm sorry, training, you know, I guess people think if they're doing an incline press and they go to failure, that's training hard. They don't realize that there's a lot more.
Right.
You start cycling, you know, squats, leg presses, lunges, and you're doing 30 rep squats and 20 rep leg presses and, you know, 15 rep each leg lunges, and you're going back to the squat, and I got 600 pounds on the hack squat, 1600 on the leg press. And I said, you know, that's when you're getting under a weight and if you think about it, you won't do it because that weight can crush you. And you've been there, you know, you train, yeah. You know, you understand it, you know. A lot of people don't understand that you can't think. You just got to go, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Wow. So you started training with Mihalik after that contest?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Was Mihalik at that show like Rustin, or did you just go to his gym?
Was he at the team?
The Teen America?
The Teen America. No. Gruskin, I met at the Teenage America. Matter of fact, I was sitting in the audience. He came on. He was sitting next to me, and he said, "Oh, are you in the show?" And I said, "Yeah." And he grabbed my arm, and I pulled my arm away. What do you grab my arm? I don't grab my arm. You want to see how big my arm was, you know?
Yeah.
Well, my arm. I was actually rude to him at first, you know.
And right. You know,
he was later on because he's the most incredible human being I've ever met in my life.
Yeah.
He helped so many people, you know. And
yeah.
And, so that was the first meeting with Bob. But Steve, you know, when I was this teenage bodybuilder, you know, I think the first time I went in there, I was 16 or 17. And, you know, I went in the gym and, you know, I was one of the best built guys in my high school. So, of course, he wants to meet me, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, but I went to school with Andy Lopidoti. I don't know if you know Andy.
Yeah, I remember Andy Lopidoti.
Andy was in my high school. They called him Andy Arms. And Andy would always wear this little sister shirt, you know. His arms were like this. So his arms were big enough.
Yeah.
He didn't need to wear these tight shirts. And me, I was always conservative. I always wore shirts down to here, you know. And
yeah.
So everyone was like, you think you're big? You see Andy Arms, you know. I was like, all through high school, I had to hear about Andy Arms. And here I am, you know, I'm building this incredible symmetrical physique.
Yeah.
And all I hear is, oh, you think you're big, you know. I mean, you always get that, you know, you think you're big stuff, you know.
Yeah.
This one older guy said to me once, when I was 274, when I was my biggest, you know, in the picture by the Hummer, you probably see the picture by the Hummer in the yellow shirt. I don't know if you did. I was 274 in that picture. I'm in a restaurant. This old guy comes up to me and says, oh, hey, you think you're big? You should see my grandson. I said, really? I said, you know, he's pretty big, huh? Oh, he's but wider than you. Really, how old is he? Oh, he's going to be 16 next month. I said, hey, do me a favor. Can you introduce me to him? I'd like to get him ready for the Olympia.
Right.
If he's 16 and he's
bigger than you. He's bigger than 74.
It's my biggest, you know?
Yeah, right.
But, you know, getting back to Mihalik. So, you know, I go to Mihalik's gym and, you know, and I walk in and, you know, I'm this teenage kid, you know, who thinks he's something. And I said, I'm here to see Steve Mihalik. Because I heard, you know, Mr. America's gym. This guy's Mr. America. And I'm thinking, I want to be Mr. America. That was my goal all along.
Yeah.
I gotta meet this guy. I got to see if I can train with him. So I go over there and I say, I'm here to see Steve Mihalik. Well, he's busy training right now. I said, well, I'd like to see him. He said, well, he's busy training right now. I said, okay. So, you know, I hung around by the front a little bit and waited till the guy turned his back. And I walked past him into the gym, and I'm thinking he's going to want to meet me, man. You know?
Yeah.
So I go in and I said, he just put the bar down. He was doing lunges. He just put the bar down. I said, hey, Steve Mihalik, what are you, get the hell out of me? Don't you ever interrupt me during a workout. You get the hell out of my gym now. And it takes me out of the gym, you know? And
yeah.
So I, I was like, I wasn't gonna quit at that point. I'm saying, man, that guy, I saw him. He was a monster. Matter of fact, the first time I saw him was at the Mets, the Mets contest. And I was sitting in the audience in an early Mets contest, and he walked in the auditorium. And I said, I looked at my friend, and I looked back at Steve, and I looked at my friend, and my exact words were, "What the F is that?"
Yeah.
What the F is that? I've never seen a human being with a waist like this.
Yeah.
27-inch waist with a 57-inch chest. Nothing like it I've ever seen in my life, to this day even. You know, I'm that much of a difference.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's why I wanted to meet him so bad. So that night I came back to the gym and I'm looking in the window, you know, because I'm afraid to go inside. I'm looking in the window. I'm looking to see if I could see him. And all of a sudden, boom, I get this slap on the back of the neck. "What do you want, kid?" You know, and it was Steve. And I said, "Man, I want to be Mr. America. I want to be like you, you know?"
Yeah.
"Really?" He says, "So, you train hard?" I said, "Do I train hard? I train harder than anybody, right?"
Yeah.
I said, "Okay." He says, "Okay." He says, "You be here tomorrow." Have you heard this story? He
said, No. I never heard this story.
"You be here tomorrow, 7 o'clock. Now, the gym opened at 9, so he trained from 7 to 9 usually.
Okay.
So he said, "You be here tomorrow at 7 o'clock. So I said, "All right, I'll be here," right? So I'm a kid. I just got my learning permit or whatever. I'm driving. I'm late. I run a few minutes late. I get there. I come in. It's 7:05. And he's doing something. He started to train. And I said, "Well, what do you want me to do?" "Are you kidding me? You show up late for me? You get the F out of my gym now. I don't know who you think you are." He goes, "You want to come? You know, you come back tomorrow. You be here at 7. But right now, you get the F out of my gym right now. And you don't come back till tomorrow. I'll see you at 7 tomorrow." Okay. So I'm going to come back at 7 tomorrow. So tomorrow I get there at 6:30 in the morning. I'm like, man, I ain't going to blow this.
Right. So
6:30, you know, there's a little curb outside his gym. I'm sitting on the curb. 7 o'clock comes, he's not there. I'm thinking, okay, well, you know what? Now he's late, you know, but I'm not going to say nothing. You know, because he's still 3 times my size. So right. I'm like, you know, he's late. So 7:30 comes, I'm still there. 8 o'clock comes, I'm still sitting there. I'm afraid to leave. I'm like, if I leave and this guy shows up, I'm done. You know, I just knew with his personality, just from what I've seen so far, I knew I had to stay. So I stayed. So he pulls up in his Corvette at 9 o'clock to open the gym. He gets out of the Corvette. I said, "Excuse me, weren't we supposed to train at 7? Today's rest day. You be here tomorrow at 7 o'clock. Walks in the gym, right? Okay. All right. This is going to
– today's the rest day.
You know? So the next day I show up at 7 o'clock. True story. I'm – I think it was just 16 or 17, you know.
That's okay. Right.
And so he says to me, "All right, we're going to do chest." He says, "You know, you follow me." So he grabs the 60-pound dumbbells and he does 12 flies.
Okay. Right?
Now, at home, I was going up to 40s, and I think I might have picked up the 60s one time.
Yeah.
Nothing, you know, but I had handled the 40s. So he does 12 reps at the 60. So I go over and I go to grab the 40s. But what are you doing? I said, "We're doing flies, right?" "Not with that weight, we're not." He grabbed the 60s. And I look at him. I'm like, he goes, "You grab the 60s. He goes, "You train with me. You train with me. You use my weights. You don't use no bullshit baby weights." Right? So I'm like, all right, man. I'm thinking now I'm digging deep.
Right.
I'm going to show this guy. This is my shot, man. I'm going to show this guy. And I get there, I grab the 60s, I give it everything I got, man, and I get to 10, and somehow I squeak out 12 reps, and I put those dumbbells back on the rack, and I'm exhausted, you know. I mean, I gave it every ounce I had in me, right?
Right.
Put the weights back on the rack, I step back, and, you know, I turn around, and I'm thinking to myself, oof, that was rough. I turn back, and he's grabbing the hundreds. And he grabs the hundreds and he does 12 perfect reps with the hundreds. And true story. And I'm literally, John, I'm looking at the door. Yeah. I may have to pass on this, man. Because, right. You know, at that age, with the muscle I was carrying, I'm thinking those weights are coming down. My arms are going to just
rip.
They're just going to pour out of my – they're just going to tear out of my body, you know?
Right.
So he finishes his set, puts the weights back, goes, let's go. I go – he goes, let's go. Grab the weights. I don't know what to do. I'm scared to death. I'm shaking over this. I go over and, you know, now the bench is in front of the 100-pound dumbbells. And he says, I got you. You just, you know, put the weights on your legs and, you know, you're going to throw them back and I'm going to bring you through, you know. But
yeah, he
wasn't saying it nice. It wasn't like,
right. it wasn't encouraging.
You know, it wasn't a pretty, okay, look, we're going to, it was like, grab the damn weights. Let's go. Put them on your legs. Let's go. I got you. We're going to do this.
Yeah.
All right, so I grabbed the weights. I go to pick them up. Literally, I mean, you know what it's like. Even now, you know, at our age, picking up the hundreds and just picking
right,
up.
Right, right.
Yeah, you know? So I pick up the hundreds and put them on my legs, and they're like two tanks on my legs. He says, throw them up. It's all awkward. They're like this, you know. I'm like,
right.
He said, now come down. Like, come down. So he's got me there. I come down. I think I did two force reps. Right, maybe two force reps, like where he was doing like the majority of it, right?
Yeah.
And this went on for months. And I have pictures of me at 16 years old, 16, 17 years old, doing flat flies, perfect form with 100-pound dumbbells. And I post them a lot because, you know, really it's a testament to where I came from and what I had to do where I had no choice. You know, people say, how did you do that? You know, because you had no choice. The body either has to adapt or break.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying, you know, that you do that. And I don't have my trainers do that with clients, but because that was the extreme. And fortunately, you know, I got good Italian genes and good tendons and ligaments. Mm-hmm. I didn't tear anything or didn't rip my arms out, but I was able to do by the time I was 17. I know by the time I was 17, I did 12 reps with the hundreds and they were good. They were flies. They weren't this, you know.
Yeah,
they were out here, and you could see it in the pictures. I'll post them.
Yeah,
but you could see it in the pictures, and it's, you know, people are like, man, how'd you do that? I said, I had no choice.
Yeah,
that's how I did. I had no choice. My choice was to walk out defeated and not even attempt it, and have him call me a failure and a loser.
Yeah,
which Steve said a lot. You know, he wasn't. He didn't have a lot of encouraging words. It was,
right,
you know,
right.
But for the right people, they were the right words. For me, it was the right words. I needed that. I grew up in a very tough household. My brother's two-time All-American wrestler. He's in the Wrestling Hall of Fame. And my dad was a bodybuilder. So I grew up in a very competitive environment. So I really needed the tough love, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And today it's hard to do that with people because they're so weak.
Yeah.
Yeah, I said it. You know, for you guys that are listening, you younger guys, I'm going to challenge you to be strong for once because
yeah.
I have to tell you, I've never seen such weakness in my life. Somebody will say, hey, can you take a look at me and tell me what you think? And, you know, I'll look at them and they'll say, well, you know what? You know, you have some potential, but we got to get your lats up. You know, your lower back is weak. We got to bring, you know, work those erectors, bring it in. Oh, what are you saying? I suck? No, that's not what I said. Well, it sounds like you're saying I suck. I know. It's not what I said, but now I can say it. You suck.
Yeah.
You know, your attitude sucks. You suck. You're probably never going to accomplish shit in your life because you already have this I'm a victim mentality. And if I had that, I never would have lasted with Steve. I mean, he called me at times, you know, in workouts, he called me an effing skeleton with a wig. You're an effing skeleton with a wig. You think you got muscles? This is after I won the Mr. New York. You think you have muscles? You have no muscles. He pointed to my picture on the wall from the contest. Look at the picture. He goes, I don't even know why I have it on the wall. He goes, you look like a coat hanger. He goes, there's no muscles on that body. Are you kidding me? And he was dead serious. Like he said it with such conviction.
Right.
And I was the type of guy that said, you know what? No, I'm going to show this. I'm going to show this motherfucker. I mean,
yeah.
I was just, you know, I was relentless and I knew what I had to do. And, and then the other thing was, you know, when I think I was training with him 4 days, 5 days, he put me in the hospital. You know, I went off my diet one night and I told him I went off my diet and it ends up being this big thing. He says, well, you'd be at the gym tomorrow at 7. After he didn't talk to me for like 2 hours on the phone, I kept calling. He wouldn't take my call. And his wife was all pissed off, Thomasini. She said, Steve's really mad. I don't know what he's mad. I said, I ate some ice cream, you know. And this is the only time in my life ever training for a contest did I eat something bad. And pretty much because the lesson I learned. So that lesson was, you know, I got there at 7 in the morning. And I would always log my workout in 7 o'clock, train chest and shoulders. Or legs, whatever, and then first meal 9 o'clock. You know, so usually we train at 7, be done about 8:30, quarter to 9, was an hour and a half, hour 45 minutes, and mm-hmm. then I'd go home and I'd have my first meal right away. So I usually log in 7 o'clock workout, 9 o'clock, you know, breakfast, and that day 7 o'clock workout, 2:30 breakfast. Right, we trained from 7 in the morning till about 2 o'clock.
Wow,
I went home.
What did you do, John? He did a bunch of body parts, right?
We did nine. This is exactly what we did. We did 90 sets for biceps, did 90 sets for triceps, and I'm talking about 90 hard sets.
Right.
So we do 90 sets for biceps, 90. Now, so see, in those years, all those years I trained with Steve, we did 3 body parts a day, 6 days a week, incidentals on Sunday.
Okay.
So it was chest, shoulders, and triceps. Legs, back, and biceps, chest, shoulders, triceps, legs, back, and biceps.
Each body part 3 times a week.
So we did each body part 3 times a week.
Wow.
So we would do chest, shoulders. So say we do chest, shoulders, and triceps. It was chest and shoulders in the morning. I mean, chest, shoulders, and back. We do chest and shoulders in the morning, back at night. Or chest and back in the morning, shoulders at night. We always 2 major body parts in the morning, 1 at night. And okay. then on leg day, it was, you know, arms in the morning, biceps, then triceps, or together, and then legs at night, you know, being or vice versa. But whichever, that's how we broke it up. So it was legs and arm day. So, you know, arm and leg day. So we do 90 sets of biceps, and he's just pissed off. I came in, he's speeded out. You know, Steve would take speed for the workout. I'd come in, he'd hand me a Black Beauty. I'd walk over to the water fountain. I'd throw the Black Beauty behind the water fountain. True story. Throw the Black Beauty behind the water fountain, because I was like, man, I was not going to take drugs, you know.
Right.
You know, and I, you know, so, but as I would throw it behind the water fountain every day, I would take it, and as I would throw it behind the water fountain, you know, there was like a gully back there. I'd throw it back there, and as I would get a drink, I'd be thinking to myself, this guy's going to kill me, man. He's oh, let's go. He's like raging, you know. I mean,
yeah.
Like a machine. The guy was like a machine, and So on that day, we do 90 sets of biceps. I'm dying. 90 sets of triceps. We're finishing up on, as a matter of fact, we were doing the tricep cycle, and I questioned an exercise, and he took a bar and he threw it. He hit a lamp shattered. I'm going, man, this isn't good, you know. After, you know, you're an effing skeleton with a wig, you know this, you're that, you know, this and that, right? So we're on the last cycle of triceps. We've got 3 exercises, and I'm just thinking, man, I can't wait to get out of here because I'm dead. I mean,
yeah.
90 sets of biceps, and a lot of people think, oh well, defenders did high volume, you did light weights. You know, you've probably seen a lot of the pictures. You didn't use light weights,
right?
So we're finishing up that last cycle, and I'm just, you know, I'm looking at the door like, I got to get out of here, man. I'm going to die, and. As I'm finishing that last tricep exercise, I turn around and Steve's on the leg extension. And you want to see horror on a person's face, because I know what that means. That means that because we didn't do 90 sets. We didn't do 40 sets of a body part and then 20 of another.
Yeah.
There was a pattern. So if it was 90 sets, it was 90 sets. If it was 40 sets, it was 40 sets.
Yeah.
And we never did 90 sets. I mean, this was the lesson I was going to learn. Okay.
Right.
We've done 40, we've done 50, we've done 60 sets of body part, but we've never done 90 sets. And then we've never done, you know, 3 body parts in a row, you know, so we did, you know, biceps, triceps, and now he's on the leg extension and I'm just horrified. How am I even going to do this? You know? And I told him quit, cause I knew if I quit, that would be it. You know, he'd never take me back. So we do this 90 set leg workout. I go home. It's like, you know, going on 2:30. I remember I had a pound of ground sirloin and I had broiled it and I would use vinegar. I put vinegar on it.
Okay.
I'm sitting there like this, going to eat the meat, and I'm like hanging over the thing. And my mother's going, "What's the matter with you?" And I was like, I barely could talk. You know, hard workout, you know.
Yeah.
She goes, "You don't look good," you know. And then I just was, I was incoherent. So she said, "We're going to the hospital." She took me to the hospital. They put me in, I got like zero potassium in my body. You know, potassium regulates your heart. It's not a thing you want to have nothing of, you know.
Right, right.
So they're pouring minerals back into my body, right?
Yeah.
So I'm in the hospital. The next night, my friend John Farina comes around. He's a good friend of mine. You know, he would always go to the gym and train, not with us, but he trained on his own. And John comes by and he says, "Man, you're all right?" I'm like, "Yeah." He says, "Man, yeah, it's too bad, you know, you get in the hospital." And I said, "Yeah." I go, "Does Steve know I'm in the hospital?" Because I didn't hear nothing from Steve, you know. "Yeah, yeah, he knows." I said, "Well, what'd he say?" He didn't say nothing. I go, "Oh, he had to say something. I mean, you know." "No, John, he didn't say nothing." I go, "John, how do you know he knows I'm in the hospital?" "Well, he knows you're in the hospital. You know, we talked about it." I go, "Well, what'd he say?" He said, I go, "John, just tell me what he said." He said, "Defendus is mentally and physically weak and he'll never be a champion."
Just because you're in the hospital.
So I got out of the hospital. Then this was before the Mets. But this one was actually before the teenage and the Mr. New York.
Okay.
I got out of the hospital. I trained in my basement. My basement alone for the Mets. And
okay.
I went in. And then I won both, and Steve was there. And then afterwards, I went back. I said, "Okay, well, I proved you wrong. Now I'm back in the game, Leo." And then we trained, you know, for the next 3 years, you know.
Wow. Did he say anything to you at the contest?
No. He didn't know.
You
he
had just, to go back to the gym.
Yeah, I had to go back to the gym. Yeah, no, yeah. he didn't even know. Mm-mm.
Didn't acknowledge it, yeah. Wow.
You know, Gruskin was there, and I remember, know if you remember Doc Neely.
Yeah.
Doc Neely was another guy that was instrumental in those early years. Flew me down to Georgia so I could lose the Teenage USA. You know, Rudy Hermosillo won that one.
Sylvester
Stallone gave him the trophy. And James Yasenchik won the Teenage America. Do you know who he was?
I remember the name. Yeah,
James Yasenchik was the Teenage Arnold, 6'1", 225, ripped.
Wow.
You know, I mean, when I was at the Teenage America that year, I remember the baby blue sweats, you know, and I unzip and I have no muscle left. And I'm like, and I look in the mirror and there's this monster walking by, and that was James Yasenchik. And I'm like, wow. I said, "Who's that guy? I mean, he's probably going to win the America, huh?" Whatever, you know, I thought he was the men's, you know?
Yeah.
"Oh, he's a teenager." What? Teenager. I'm like, "That guy's a teenager?" It's like, that. I just deflated. And my brother flew up there with his friend in a private plane. And after prejudging, I come down and I got my gym bag and I didn't play. So they said, you know, "You don't have to come back at night if you don't want to." See you.
Yeah, right.
I'm walking out the back and my brother comes over to me. My brother's a great champion and he puts his arm around me and he says, "Listen," he says, "don't ever invite me to another one of your shows. You embarrass the shit out of me." He said, "That was so embarrassing." He goes, "You didn't even belong up there." He goes, you know, I mean, and that's the kind of support I got.
Right. This is your whole life, right?
And then I remember, you know, for the Apollo, after I won the Mets, the New York, they asked me, I forget Frank's name. He was a promoter. He promoted the Apollo up in upstate New York, White Plains. And he called me up. He said, "Listen, Ron Tufel was supposed to guest pose and he got sick or something. So he can't do it. Is there any way you can guest pose?"
Mm-hmm.
Only in the morning of the show. And I said, "You know, I don't know. I'll have to get back to you. Let me talk to Steve." So I called Steve. I said, "Steve, they want me to guest pose at the Apollo." I said, "Do I look good enough? You know, I don't know. Come on in. Let me take a look at you." So I go to the gym. I got shorts on. You know, I take my shirt off and, you know, I'm posing in the bags. "Yeah, you look fine. You don't have to be ripped to guest pose. You know, you're fine, you know?"
Yeah.
So I got this half-ass tan from in shorts, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you see the tan, even with
right,
the
right.
Still, you know, you still see the shorts tan. And
right.
It just don't look good, right? The contest was pretty competitive. I forget who won that year. I get called out to guest pose at the end. I'm doing this dynamic routine. Nobody's clapping, right? I'm like waiting for I'm waiting for the applause, hit the shots.
Yeah.
Nobody's clapping. So I finished the routine and I'm like, man, I look like shit, man. I shouldn't have done this. So I walk off stage and I go backstage, and I remember I'm sitting on the stairs backstage by the curtain. And Mahala comes back there and he goes, "What are you doing?" I said, "Man, I shouldn't have done that, man. I look like shit." I said, "Man, I just feel like killing myself, man. And I joke, and I said, "I feel like killing myself." And he looks up at the curtain rope and he goes, "You know what?" He goes, "There's a rope right there." He goes, "If I were you, I would." Honest to God, right? And he walks away. And he told me I could pose, you know?
You know,
it's like, but so it was all these things combined from also, you know, getting my ass beat by Dwayne Broadway in one of my first contests, you know, at the Suburban.
Right.
Dwayne looked incredible, still do. I mean, he's got 60 something, looks freaking phenomenal.
Yeah.
Still,
yeah.
He's like you, ageless, you know? Dwayne was incredible. You know, he beat me, he beat Tom Terwilliger, Casey Kacharik. That contest, we had me, Tom Terwilliger, Casey Kacharik, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
That's when I took dead last, and, you know, and, there was four contestants and I didn't get called out. They called out the top three and my friends had told me during the day I won. So I'm backstage telling the guy, "Look, I won the contest. I should be out there." And the guy goes, "No, son, what's your name?" I said, "Defendus." He goes, "No, son, you didn't place." I'm like, "There's four people. There's three guys out there. What do you mean I didn't place?" I said, "You know, my friends told me I won. Why would they lie to me?"
Right.
This is you know, young. I'm a kid, you know.
Right.
So then a funny thing. So when Gruskin passed away a year and a half, 2 years ago,
mm-hmm.
I got all the files. You know, they sent me all the files from that he had on me. You know, big everything. It's incredible.
Yeah.
All the pictures. You know, I have so many pictures. And so I looked, and there was the score sheet from the Suburban when Dwayne won and.
Yeah.
And he beat all of us. And there's the four names. And they spelt Defendus. My name has a capital F, but they spelt it with a small F. And it looks like a P.
Okay.
So it looks like the penis. Right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, great. Not only did I take last, but everyone thinks I'm the penis. You know, it's like, I go, you know,
God.
How ironic is this, you know?
Yeah.
But it's those losses that make us great, that make us a winner. I mean, if we hang in there and we use that, you know, and, you know, I think most great champions suffered defeat at some point and they
didn't
like it. You know, I tasted it. You know, the essence of defeat, you know, you taste it and I said, no, spit that out. I want to know what it tastes like to win.
Right, right.
And winning to me is so. It's so important because I know what losing is like. And if you don't really feel the agony of loss, the agony of defeat, you really can't appreciate when you do have those victories.
Yeah. What was the first one you won, John? Was it the Metropolitan?
My first big win was the Teenage Atlantic States.
Okay.
That flew me down. And that was 2 weeks before the Teenage Mets.
Okay.
And so I went down, I flew down there, I won the Teenage Atlantic State, won every body part except for legs. The legs went to, I can't remember his name. He won leg, not legs, abs. I won every body part but abs. I didn't win best abs because he had that rip shredded, you know, the midsection. So I won every body part. And that was when they give out body part awards.
Yeah, that was great. I used to love that.
I had 93 trophies at one point. I gave them all away. I changed the nameplates. I gave them to clients. You know, I said, I'm not going to, you know, once you win the big title, you know, the USA trophy, that's the one.
Right. That's one you keep.
You can see it there.
Yeah.
You know, that's You know, once I got that, you know, I got the best poser at both USA, so I have those trophies. But everything else I gave away, put somebody's name on it for the work, hard work that they do. And
yeah,
really applaud anyone that's willing to work hard for a goal, you know?
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. How did you learn how to be a good poser, Joe?
The first time I took a posing lesson was from Tony Pandolfo.
Okay.
And, you know, he was Tom Terwilliger's mentor, you know.
Yeah, Tom's mentioned many times.
Yeah, Tony did one posing lesson with me, and, you know, I kind of got the gist of, you know, you got to be dramatic, you got to move, it's got to flow. And then I worked on my posing every single day, usually 45 minutes to an hour a day, every single day, you know, just working really hard on it and, you know, over time.
Yeah. Remember back in the day when we had the cassette tapes?
And
you had to, because the music can only be so long, like a minute or whatever, or 90 seconds. Uh-huh. And so you had to get the right part of the song. That was such a pain in the ass.
God. What was the earliest you competed?
79.
79, USA, San Jose, California. They have one cassette tape. What do you want to pose to? You got two choices. Rocky, the theme from Rocky, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, the first one, right?
Yeah.
Or that one, that classic song.
Exodus. Yeah.
Exodus. So it was, I'm glad you got it. Exodus, you got Exodus or you got Rocky? I took Rocky.
Yeah. But Exodus was from the 60s.
Dude, every single guy was either Exodus or Rocky. Like,
wow.
The prejudging went till 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, and it was like,
wow,
oh my God, this is terrible, you know? You know, but it was Exodus or Rocky. That was your choice, you know?
Yeah.
And then later on, you know, you got, you know, mixing music and the whole thing, you know, I didn't quite get to that era where everyone was mixing a lot of good music. You know, I kind of went with one song because that was before, really, you know?
Yeah.
Vince Taylor, incredible.
It's important to coordinate the pulses with the music too. And that takes a lot of practice, you know?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But it makes such a difference with the audience reaction. You know, if you do it right, I mean, it's unbelievable how much the audience will get into it.
Absolutely. Tommy was a phenomenal player.
Yeah, he was a fantastic player.
Tommy was just incredible. Tommy, I hate the guy because he's so good at everything. you know, I'm being facetious. Tommy's one of my best ever friends. I mean, a lifelong friend. You know, we trained in my basement.
Yeah.
But together for a while. And, you know, I remember I had a dartboard and we would throw the darts at how many reps you got to do, you know?
Really?
So, you know, I'm trying to get one rep landed on bullseyes and 20s, you know?
Right.
It's good, you know? But yeah, I use a dartboard. I made a game out of it. I said, let's use the dartboard, man. And whatever it lands on, that's how many reps you got to do, you know?
Right.
You know, I've done everything. Roll the dice and see how many reps you do. You know? That's all those teenage years. I did all kind of weird stuff.
Yeah.
But matter of fact, you know, people always say, this is an interesting fact, when it comes to my vacuum pose, they say, you know, how did you develop the vacuum pose to be so good? And I tell you the answer to it, and it's the long-lost exercise. It's pullovers.
Yeah.
And you have that rib cage, that incredible rib cage. And I mean, I'm sure you've done your share of pullovers.
I did them right from the start. Yeah.
And that's the key. And I tell these kids today, I said, you know, they don't even know the exercise, and a lot of the pros don't even do it, you know?
Oh.
And, because you know what I see, John, I see that now because drugs are so rampant when it comes to the internet, people buying drugs off the internet, you get a kid, but he's been working out a week. He's getting, you know, taking something. And then what happens is they put on 20 pounds, and even though they trained wrong and did everything wrong, now you can't tell them anything because, man, what are you talking about? Man, I'm getting big, man. It's working, you know? No, it's not working. What's working is you're taking something, and then you're going to go off that, and you're going to lose 19 and a half of it, you know?
Right.
I mean, you know, because people even say, you know, I mean, you know, you've done incredible things natural, you know? People say, how do I keep my size? You know, I'm 250 pounds at 64 years old. How do I keep my size? You know, because I built it without drugs first.
Right.
I used them for a short period of time, and I've been off them now for 32 years, with the exception of that one cycle in 2005, which is 6 weeks, was when I was the Hummer shot. You know, Hummer shot, I was 274, and, you know, and then at night I was going like this, trying to breathe. I'm like, yeah, you know what? I'm 47 years old. This isn't good, you know? And right. That was it, you know? And
right.
But that the muscle that we built was built on hard work, you know?
Yeah.
Hard work, you know? Same with you, hard work and knowledge. But, you know, I keep saying people underestimate knowledge, but the pullovers, early on, you know, when I was 13 years old, I was reading the magazines, and Dave Draper with that headband shot, you know, the all-American guy with the long blonde hair. The surfer, man, this guy is cool, you know, and he did these things called pullovers over a bench, you know.
Yeah.
I didn't have a bench, you know, so went outside, and, you know, we had one of them redwood picnic tables with the curved benches.
Right.
And I dragged one of them redwood benches down in the basement, and it was perfect because it was curved, so I could lay in that curve, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I got myself a dumbbell. I started doing pullovers, you know? High rep pullovers. And I did what Dave said. Whatever Dave said in the magazine with the pullovers, I did it. And I said, I want to have that turtle shell back, you know? Dave, when he, you know, hit that front double bicep, his lats were wide, you know?
Right.
And I've just done pullovers my entire life.
Me too.
To this day. And the greatest thing I discovered was 7 years ago when I met my girlfriend, Lisa. We were going to train together. And I said, you know, I got the gym here. And I'm like, you know what? I want to get a half moon bench. You remember the half moon bench?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I want to buy a half moon bench. And that's where I looked everywhere for a half moon bench. And I couldn't find one. And that's what we used back in those early days. So then I got to thinking. And I said, well, let me get a Bosu ball and put the Bosu ball at the end of the bench. So I went and I got the Bosu ball and I put it at the end of the bench, where now I got the base of my back at the bottom and my chest at the top.
Okay.
Use a cable. So with a cable, you can drag that weight over. With a dumbbell, you start to get that weight over, and then a lot of people heave it over, you know?
Yeah.
I don't want to heave it over. I want to let my lats, my chest, and my serratus pull that weight over.
Right.
So I get a full stretch, and I actually let the short straight bar, I let it roll out to my fingers, so it's all the way out here. So
yeah.
I can get that serratus to really, you know, engage.
Right.
And then I drag it over, you know, high reps. And I tell you something, I will never do pullovers any other way, because you try it. If you got a Bosu ball, put it at the bench, use the low cable.
Okay.
Reps high, 20, 25 reps. And it, John, it's unbelievable. I mean, my girlfriend was like, after a month of doing it, she goes, I feel like I had a boob lift. You know, now my chest is up here. And
everything
about it, it just works miracles.
So you're using the Bosu ball instead of the bench?
I use the bench with the Bosu ball at the end. So you're up on the bench. Yeah, you're up on the bench. So you're using the Bosu ball as the hump on the half moon.
Okay.
You're sitting on the – you're actually sitting on the bench with your – and then your back is on the ball.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
And then you're reaching back like that and pulling like that. But every single trainer in my company, that's part of protocol. Like the workouts, everything that – the trainers do comes from me, all the workouts and nutrition, everything.
Yeah, that's so great.
Trainers implement it, and they can't deviate. You know, I tell them, you know, well, I don't know. Look, it's not a democracy. You know, for me to guarantee the result of the client, I have to make sure they're doing the program the right way. You know, and, you know, you always got that trainer who's, you know, who's 19 years old, who knows more than your 50 years of training, you know? Well, I don't agree with you. Okay, well, show me something you've accomplished. And
right.
You know, it's like, you know, I don't mean to be cocky, but, you know, here's the truth, you know, experience, knowledge and experience and results matter, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, unfortunately, you know, today a lot of people, they watch, you know, TikTok and Instagram and well.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I had a guy I was interviewing for a job, 19-year-old kid. You know, so he calls up for the interview, and I said, well, you know, you're really going to learn a lot with UltraFit. You're going to learn a lot in the program. Well, I know how to train. I've been training for a year and a half, you know. I said, you know what? Listen, you're going to learn a lot. You know, hey, Mr. Defenders, like I said, I know how to train. listen to me. You're going to learn. He said, no. So he kept insisting, you know, nothing this kid can learn at 19.
Right.
So I said, you know, that's one thing I got to give myself credit for. When I was a kid, I shut up and I listened to Mahalik. I listened. And so I said, okay, let me ask you a question. What do you do for back? Right. Now, I'm very strategic with back. I start with lats because lats are the biggest part of the body. Want to get the blood in the lats, work the heck out of the lats, bring it to the middle. You know, I have transitional exercises. I have standing cable row, which works lats, back, and erectors. So, you know, very calculated with the back workout. And so I said to the guy, what do you do for back? You see, okay, you know how to train. What do you do for back? Well, I start out with, you know, heavy bent over row, supersetted with barbell curls. I go, why would you superset bent over rows with barbell curls? Well, you got to know. I always get this from the young guys.
Yeah.
They have this sentence. Hey, listen, John, you got to know, okay? You got to know that when you work your back, you're also working your biceps. So, you know, you got to kill two birds with one stone. I says, listen, I got a parrot for 25 years. Don't be talking about killing no birds. You know? So number one, first get the birds out of it. Okay. Second, you don't know what the hell you're talking about. Okay. You're exhausting your body part that you need to train back. Okay. You want to be able to do the back workout, you know, and not have loose grip and everything from exhausting your forearms and your biceps, you know?
Right. So,
but you know, that's the, you know, I deal with a lot of that, you know, with a lot of people I do interviews with, you know, but you know, what I look for when I'm hiring a trainer is somebody with a pure heart that has the passion to help people, you know? Yeah. I can teach them everything else. My directors are great. They've been with me for years. Joe's been with me 22 years. Tanya, 12 years. Mike, 11 years. I mean, all my directors, Terry's been with me like 8 years. But they've all been with me for years, and they're really good. And they teach, you know, my system. And what I look for is the people with a pure heart that want to help people, and they want to act as a team, and they're willing to listen.
Yeah.
We take care of the rest, you know. You know, a lot of times today you got the guy that knows it all and it's hard to work with. And he's also, it's about him, not about the team.
Yeah.
And the team, when you're working in an environment like we're working in here, it has to be about the team. You know, it has to be about working together.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, the team is more powerful than me or the director or the trainer. It's, you know, when everyone's working together, it gives that person the power to be able to accomplish great things, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thank you to John DeFendis for that great interview. We will have part two with John next week on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thank you to all our Patreon sponsors for continuing to support the show. And as I might have mentioned before, I am now an online coach with ProPhysique.com. So if you guys are interested in any online coaching with your workouts or diets, you can just go to ProPhysique.com. I've got the direct link in the description for this podcast. All right. Before I let you guys go, I'm going to read our article of the week. And this comes from the December 1988 issue of Flex Magazine. And as you guessed, we are going to read an article about John DeFendis. And the name of the article is Jackpot in Vegas for John DeFendis. A flawless physique from the past comes out of nowhere to sweep the USA championships, and was written by Bill Reynolds, editor in chief of Flex Magazine. It says, of all the athlete off the scrap heap stories in the history of our great sport, none can rival the recent comeback tale of John DeFendis. 9 years away from national level competition, five completely out of competition pitcher, yet DeFendis made such a complete resurrection that he not only requalified for a national contest, but shortly after actually won the recent USA championships and qualified for IFBB professional status. Let's pick up John's inspiring story in 1979, when he had just placed third in his class and won best poser as a 20-year-old at the USA. After the USA that year, he says, I moved from New York, where I grew up, to Arizona. A year later, I flew back east and I won the Eastern America Championships in Maryland. I kept training, and then in 1983, I won the Western America Championships in Los Angeles. That was my last competition until this year, although I kept training constantly during that period. In the past 5 years, for example, I've only laid off for about 4 months. Toward the end of 83, I moved to Florida and I started working at the Palm Beach Gym. I also ran my personal training business out of the club. I don't do one-on-one training.
Rather, I charge for a complete training and dietary program. I don't like to baby people and stand over them yelling, two more reps, two more reps. Over the past 5 years, I've trained virtually all the major contest winners in Florida. I was sort of living my goal of being a national champion through everyone I was training because I really didn't have the confidence to compete on the national level myself. I'd go to all the shows in Florida to see my students win their titles. I'd feel great about their victories. I'd be proud of them. But deep inside, I felt like I was missing out on my goal, being an NPC USA or national champion and turning professional with the IFBB. Throughout this period, I continued training hard, working on my weak points, putting on a great deal of general muscle mass. I was improving consistently. I'd actually get into shape once a year, thinking I hit a national show, but then I'd look into the mirror and I'd see something else that I felt needed improvement if I wanted to be totally ready for a national show. I was determined not to enter again until I was absolutely sure I was good enough to win. This past year, I began to feel that I was no longer getting the appreciation I deserved from the men and women I had coached to titles in Florida. A lot of them would forget about me as soon as they had won, and it stopped being fully satisfying. Finally, I decided that the only way I could be completely happy was to accomplish my own long-term goal. Perhaps it should be called a dream. Last winter, I decided to set up an exhibition in the middle of the year, get into shape for that, and then hit a show a few months later to re-qualify for national competition. I committed myself to pose at the West Palm Beach Championships, and I started getting ready in February for the May show. A month after guest posing, I decided to go into the Coastal USA Championships, a national qualifier in Atlanta. I flew there, won very convincingly, and then I had 9 weeks to prepare for the USA. With the momentum I'd already generated, I decided to go as hard as possible for the USA, with the net result that I was able to win both the heavyweight class and the overall titles. John credits former Mr. America Steve Mihalik for initially turning him into a bodybuilding champion. When I first went to train with Steve in his gym on Long Island, New York, I had lost 9 contests in a row. After starting with Steve, I've won virtually everything I've entered. In fact, I've lost only one show since then, the USA in 79. Steve literally forged me into a champion, and I owe him a great deal for his help over the years, for the advice he's always given so unselfishly. The training program Steve and John used back in the late 70s and early 80s was dubbed Intensity or Insanity because of the huge number of total sets included in each body part workout. It wasn't at all uncommon for the dynamic duo to crank out 75 to 80 total sets for a muscle group, actually training each body part 3 times a week in a consistent double split format. Even a light workout would consist of close to 50 sets. Fueled by nearly 10 pounds of chicken per day, Defendus thrived on this extreme training program, piling on high-quality muscle mass so quickly that most people could hardly believe it. He began to win and win and win again. John still follows a similar training system, although he has somewhat moderated his workouts. A really hard workout now ends up in the range of 50 to 60 total sets and an average session of about 40 to 45 sets. However, don't get the idea that these are baby sets calling for Defendus to push about 70% of his capacity. Instead, virtually everything is taken to the point of failure, starting out with several heavy basic movements and finishing with a wide variety of isolation exercise. If it isn't insanity, it's certainly intensity. Flex will publish John Defendus' own exclusive story about how he trains in the next issue. You'll be completely blown away by the article. And our prediction is that you will soon be doing more total sets for each muscle group in your workouts. Defendus admits readily that he's a driven, compulsive person. Definitely, I'm driven to succeed, especially in bodybuilding. One of the things that really prevented me from doing a USA or Nationals earlier was the fact that I wanted to achieve perfection in my physique. I'm a very sensitive person. I have a couple of divorces behind me as a result of my commitment to the sport. I've had such tunnel vision over the years that I frequently failed to give sufficient attention to a wife. After 2 divorces, I took stock and decided the situation was crazy. I didn't necessarily have to be unhappy and go through a divorce again because of bodybuilding. As a result, I've learned to strike a better balance in my life. I still have a fantastic focus on my bodybuilding goals when I'm in the gym, but I also have better balance the rest of the time. My fiance, Nicole Apuzzo, is my best friend. I want to get married again because I like marriage and I'm a family-oriented man. I'm Italian, but Nicole is a real Italian. She's also very secure with herself. She doesn't have the need to cling to me, as was the case with my 2 exes, both of whom were models and actresses and who constantly needed my support. Nicole was working toward a law degree. She has her own life, and I wouldn't have to worry about her being insecure. When I was dieting and training for the USA, she was there when I needed her, and when I didn't need her, Nicole was off doing her own thing. Right before a show, I generally need some privacy, so Nicole even took her own hotel room in Las Vegas. A lot of women wouldn't consider doing that. My former wife certainly wouldn't have. And anytime I get irritable, which inevitably happens when a bodybuilder is training and dieting very strictly for an upcoming competition, Nicole would simply shrug it off and avoid the fight. In short, she's an absolutely great person, and I'm overjoyed to be with her. Defendus plans to become a very successful bodybuilder, something we've heard from a lot of athletes in the past, but somehow John's steady rise to the top of the pack convinces us that he might be special enough to do everything he sets out to accomplish. I plan on making a great deal of money from bodybuilding, but not just from prize money, he says. I'm realistic about where I can earn money from the sport, and I feel I can market myself well. I plan to write a book with the owner of Palm Beach Gym. We want to do videotapes and clothing, and I'll keep up my personal training business. I'd like to have income from 20 different sources so I don't have to rely on winning a particular show to pay the rent. Relying on that for a living produces a very negative type of stress. The sport has really been gaining acceptance with the general public, he continues, but I'd like to see even more of that come our way. Arnold has done yeoman service promoting bodybuilding through his film and television appearances, and I'd like to see the prize money grow until it's comparable to what golf or tennis players make. The worst baseball player in the major leagues makes more money just sitting on a bench than all but a handful of bodybuilders. We should have a money situation similar to that of other pro sports, so it's worth all the time and effort to become a pro bodybuilder. As much as I'd like to make money from the sport, however, I'm not really much of a money person. I really went into the USA more to prove to myself that I could win it than to qualify to become a pro bodybuilder. I make good money now, and I have a good lifestyle. Winning the USA was the greatest day of my life because I've now proved to myself I'm competitive with the best, which in turn has markedly boosted my self-confidence. Actually, the fact that I've won the USA still hasn't sunk in. It probably won't for at least a few weeks. I was so drained in the evening at the USA because I had so little to eat, only a cup of rice to keep my stomach empty enough to do a good vacuum in my posing routine, that I was extremely low in energy. After the show, I felt dead. But I do recall thinking, if I really do die right now, I'll be okay, just because I fulfilled my dream. I'd gotten to the point the previous year where I felt I probably wouldn't compete again, that I'd never be able to win a major show. Fortunately, I talked myself out of that one. The end. All right. Good article. And next week, when we have part two of our interview with John, I'll read the other article in here, which was about the Mr. USA report. And they say what a big surprise it was that John won the show and how competitive that was. And we'll talk more about that as well in part two of our interview with John Defendus, which will be next week. All right, everybody. Have a great week this week. I hope everybody's training hard and staying safe out there. So we will see you guys next week on the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast. Take care.